Guten Morgen, Kollisor.
Good morning, Chairperson.
How are you?
I'm good, Chairperson, and how are you?
I'm fine. Nana, I just wanted to check that audible.
Yes, you are audible, Chairperson.
All right.
Hello, Chairperson. We have three members now, and you are the fourth one.
Okay. We should. It's Honorable Mokgotsi, Honorable Tseki, Honorable Herod. So, do we need a quorum for workshop? Or can you just
I also said that the department is not in yet, Chairperson.
Okay.
And Mr. Malachi has just joined.
Mm-hmm. Where's the department? Good morning, honorable members.
Morning.
Good morning, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
I'm told the department has not logged in yet. We will wait for them to log in. Kholiswa, can you check on them? We'll then start immediately.
Mainly
they're checking
on
them,
Chairperson. Okay. We are about 19 chair on this. Is it only ourselves as the committee?
Do we have anybody from the department? Now it's 20.
I see liaison officers from the ministry.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members.
Yes.
It's CDC. You're from the department. From the department.
Oh, okay. Are you the one that you are going to lead us on the workshop?
No, Chairperson, let me just fast check where our legal services colleagues are. I know they were trying to sort out the link in one boardroom.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Chair.
All right.
Hello, Ms. Nongo, are you winning?
Chairperson, I'm winning. They are just trying to log on. Can I just request for 3 minutes, please?
In the meantime, we can then start to do the rituals of opening this meeting, and then as we're waiting for them to log in. Koliswa, can you put the agenda on the screen? there's the agenda, honorable members. We have called this meeting invited the department to come and workshop us on the bill that has been tabled by the executive to parliament, so that ourselves as members, as we are going to do public hearings or interact with the bill, we will have much more clarity on issues, and will then, because now this bill is in our hands, we should then be able to give clarity to the society and make sure that the processes of finalizing this bill towards the act is done in the manner that our people will understand what then would be the impact of this bill in their life, in changing their lives, and what this bill will be contributing towards building a better nation and addressing the challenges that is faced by our people. So with those few words, I want to welcome you to the workshop. As we usually do, I will request that we observe a moment of silence for meditation or prayer. Thank you very much. Koliswa, do we have apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. The only apology I have is from Ms. Buthelezi. She's still not well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. can we, Koliswa, on behalf of the committee, send the cut or the message to Ms. Buthelezi to wish her well, speedy recovery, because this is a third meeting that is not available. Can we do that on behalf of the committee, Koliswa?
Yes, Chairperson, I will liaise with Selina, because she is the one who has funds from your office do that, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Ngongo, are we ready? This is the agenda, honorable members. Can I get the mover for the adoption of the agenda? Members, can we adopt the agenda as tabled? Mr. Malachi?
Agreed with the agenda, Chair.
Mr. Malachi, okay. Mr. Tseki and Mr. Malachi accept the agenda. Thank you very much. Mrs. Ngongo, are they here?
We are here, Chairperson.
Okay, let me take this opportunity to welcome your team. Probably led by yourselves because I don't see any other, I don't see the DG on the system. You're welcome. You can take members through.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I will just do the introduction, Chairperson, that the Housing Consumer Protection Bill 2021, we did finalize it as a department together with NHBRC, and we did also conducted information sessions across the country. And we collated all that information and provided the response as the information that has been submitted to the Portfolio Committee now that the bill is in the hands of the Portfolio Committee. Let me then, without a waste of any time, Chairperson, then invite our Head of Legal Services, Mr. Ngwenya, to take us through the presentation and the bill which this workshop is intended to address. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Ngwenya, you're welcome.
Chair, there seems to be an error where my colleagues are sitting. I'm just going to walk across there and see where the hiccup is with the link. My apologies, Chairperson and members. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, we can hear you. Proceed, and you're welcome with your team.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me...
But there is an echo.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the honorable members. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity for us to
recording in progress
present this bill before you, pursuant to the bill being presented before you by us around, I think, in June 2021. Chairperson, we are sitting here at the HDA board room. I'm accompanied by DDG Neville Cheney. I'm accompanied by the Polani from the DG's office. I'm also accompanied by the CEO of the NHBRC. I'm also accompanied by my learned friend, Natasha, who has been busy with me on the bill. And Chair, the lastly, I also wish to register the apology, you know, on behalf of the DG, who's currently attending the cluster, you know, social protection. Chairperson, let me, without any waste of time, go straight into the bill. Chairperson, as per the agenda, now that I'll take an advantage that you have called us, actually, you know, for the, you know, for the workshop. So what I'll try to do, Chair, you know, through you and honorable members, is to attempt to give the historical imperatives of this particular bill. Why this particular bill is important and the journey that we have traveled with this particular bill, Chair. But Chair, in the main, what we are going to do, I'm going
to... You know, we see your neck only. We can't see your face. If you can turn your camera down, okay. And you, because members have seen you, you can close the video so that the network can be very clear.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll do that forthwith. Chairperson, like I've indicated that the you have requested us to appear before you today to take you through the bill through this workshop. Hence, I've indicated that, Chair, what is critical for me is that I'm going to take the portfolio committee through the most important aspect and the most important provisions of this particular bill. I'm not going to necessarily follow this presentation traditionally on Nicodemusly, but I'll deal with the bill, you know, in the form of trying to emphasize the areas of emphasis, Chairperson, if you allow me to do that. Because what is important, Chair, I'm going to take the committee through the critical aspect, you know, and provisions of this particular bill. Chair, the first element of this particular bill that I'm going to take you through is that why this particular bill, Chair, is, if you look at its own title, is called the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. And then, Chair, what I'm going to answer to the affirmative is going to be why the protection of the consumer, you know, is equal to the title. I'll indicate the Chair those three areas, fundamental, you know, aspect that underpin this particular bill. And therefore, when I'm going through the presentation, Chair, earlier on, later on, I'll also point a specific element that I'm going to talk about now before the members. The four areas of emphasis, why this particular bill is called the Consumer Protection, the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. Firstly, Chair, if you look at it, there is one aspect that is very critical in this particular bill. The first aspect, Chair, we're going to talk about what is consumer protection about this particular bill. The first part, Chair, is that we want actually the portfolio committee members to note. The first one, Chair, is that if you look in terms of the principal, you know, act which we are currently dealing with, Chairperson, it deals with the issue that relating to the cover. If you look at the cover, Chairperson, it's provide actually, you know, for a structural defect. But however, in terms of the current bill, what we're trying to do, we are trying actually not to extend the cover to include the following areas. Like, for example, where as and when, you know, you are doing the repairs, for example, if you are doing the renovations, if you are doing the alterations. That's the most important aspect, to say that why we want to extend the cover to include repairs, renovations, and alterations. And the alterations is to make sure that we extend the cover, you know, and extend the process. The first aspect, Chairperson, that we're going to deal with.
Can you switch some of the gadgets, because we can see the sound of other gadgets, okay. And they are affecting the line.
Yeah, okay, Chair. No, sort it out, Chair. The second aspect, Chair, that we're going to deal with. I've indicated the first area of
Yes, Honorable Mokoto. Sorry.
We didn't hear the last part of his presentation because the network was very poor. Can you please repeat what he was saying? Thank you.
Okay, start from the beginning, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to Honorable. My humble apologies. Chairperson, what I've indicated is that we're going to highlight the most important critical areas underpinning this particular piece of legislation, the bill. Chairperson, we're going to also emphasize the issues that relating to why this particular bill is called the Housing Consumer Protection. What is consumer protection about this particular bill? The first aspect, Chair, that I've indicated that I want the portfolio committee members to note is the issue that the cover, Chairperson, is not only as set out in the principal act that we are currently repealing. Is that, Chair, if you look in terms of the current act, the act only cover for the structural defect, you know, as and when there is a structural defect, and also guarantees the issue of the structural integrity. And it also deal with the issue that relating to the cover, relating to the roof leaks. But now with regard to this particular new bill, Chair, we are not only, you know, we're extending the cover to include also the repairs that is undertaken, you know, to the dwelling. We're also including the renovations. We're also including the alteration that can be undertaken. We're saying that as and when the consumer is engaged in the process of repairing, renovation, and alteration of their houses, we're also going to extend the cover to include those particular aspects which were not previously covered. That's one important aspect, Chair, of consumer protection. The second aspect, Chair, of consumer protection that we want to emphasize before the portfolio committee is the issue of the warranty cover period. The warranty cover period, Chairperson, in terms of the current piece of legislation, it only covers for the structural defect, if there is structural defect, but it covers for the period of only the period of 3 years. But what we are trying to do now, Chair, we are in terms of this new piece of legislation, which is our area of emphasis, we are extending the cover of the warranty cover from 3 years to 5 years. That's point number two, Chair. Point number three, Chair, we are not only extending the period of cover, we are also extending the issue in terms of the duration, the time frames upon which you have to extend the cover. Remember, in terms of the current act, Chair, point number three is that the current act provides that the cover only kicks in as and when you take occupation. When the consumer takes occupation of the house, that we needed actually to extend broader protection to the consumer. The cover now provides from the date of construction. As
we've lost you, Miss DDG, we've lost your people.
Mr. Ngwenya.
I think the network, Chair, is better in my office than where they are. it might be better for him just to make a presentation from my office. My apologies, Chairperson. Chairperson, the colleagues are battling with the network. They are in the different office, different building from Pretoria. They're in Johannesburg. They're just fixing the trying to address the connection. Chair?
Yes, we're listening. Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know what to do now. I thought they were here in the building, so at least the connection in my office is much better.
Members, that is the explanation. Our apologies.
Checking
yes.
Oh, right, fine. Morning, check. Can we just ask? Colisa, to please give us the opportunity to share.
Colisa.
Okay, Chairperson. Must I give it to you, Neville?
Yeah, that's correct, Chair.
Neville, you are not in the platform.
Okay, then under deafening washing, sorry.
Okay. Done.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Members, are you able to hear the presenter? Members?
Yes, Chair, we can hear clearly.
Okay. Proceed, sir.
Thank you very much, my humble apologies. Chairperson, I was just trying to take the honorable members through the areas of critical importance, the areas of emphasis in respect of this important piece of legislation in relation to what the Principal Act which provides. I've indicated, Chair, that one area that the Portfolio Committee members have to note, as and when we're going to engage with the people going forward, was the issue that
we are not only, we are also going to extend the cover, you know, to the consumers who are in a process or who are engaged in a process of doing the repairs, the renovations and alterations of their buildings. The second one, Chairperson, is that we're going to extend the warranty cover, you know, in terms of the structural defect, you know, of a home, you know, from 3 years to 5 years. Because the current legislation provides for 3 years, we're going to extend it to 5 years. The third point, Chairperson, that honorable members need to note is that we're further going to extend the period of the cover, you know, of the roof leak, if you're from 12 months, you know, to 24 months, to 2 years. The fourth point, Chairperson, that we're going to do in terms of this particular bill, which is very critical area of emphasis in terms of consumer protection, is that we're not only going to extend the cover for structural defect to 5 years, but also we're going to cover, you know, the structure from the date of commencement of the construction. Because we have realized here, why we want to do that? We want to do that because we have realized that, you know, during the phase of the construction, you'll agree with me, Chair, that from the foundation to the wall plate and also to the roof, there are many other issues of construction challenges that might happen in between, where it might adversely affect, you know, the structural integrity, might affect also the consumer as well. That where somebody comes, maybe inspector comes and says that, look, but the wall plates are not, you know, in accordance, you know, with the required, you know, engineering standards or whatever the reason might be, that actually, you know, the consumer will be, of course, in that particular situation, the contractor will be compelled actually to demolish that particular structure. So we have realized, Chair, that in the instance, in the main, let's extend the, you know, the protection of the consumer to that extent that from the date of commencement of the construction, then we cover that particular period that if anything of that particular nature that I've indicated just happened, then we know that that particular consumer is currently protected in that, you know, in the main. That is exactly the point that I'm going to, you know, deal with, Chair, as well. The last point, Chair, that I want to emphasize before I go to the initial presentation is the issue, Chair, that I want the portfolio committee to note is the issue that related to the transformation of the built environment. Why transformation, Chair? The Act provides, you know, I'll take the members through the provision of the bill, which provides that it warrants that the council or to warrant that the board in certain instances will use a certain portion of the surplus fund, of the warranty fund, you know, to advance transformation program within the built environment. That's a very critical point, Chair, that we wanted to do, that we have to legislate on it because we don't have to talk about the issue of transformation just in the main, but we're also going to make sure that in the main, we're going to legislate about it. While we're talking about the surplus, Chair, you understand that that's a certain portion of the warranty fund. You know, the warranty fund that is sitting at around about 8 billion at the moment, but however, the surplus fund might be around 2 billion, 3 billion. So the issue that we want to deal with, we don't want to touch the issue or don't to deal with the matters of the money that relating to the protection of the main of the consumer, but we're only going to deal with the portion of the surplus fund to advance transformation of the built environment, which is currently transformed. We want to make sure that how do we advance other builders in a different jurisdiction? Like, for example, if they find themselves in rural areas, if they find themselves in the townships, if they find themselves in any other space, that how do we maximize access actually, you know, to the built environment, and also to make sure that how do we encourage, you know, the builders in different jurisdictions for them actually, you know, to enroll, you know, continuously, you know, their projects. The other point, Chair, of emphasis is also to make sure that it's going to be mandatory now to make sure that each and every sector enroll the project that they're engaged in, including, Chairperson, what is very important, including the state itself, including even human settlement itself, that in certain instances, you'll find that our department or a provincial department or any other entity or implementing agent that we use, you know, to construct actually, you know, affordable houses within our own space, they need to be compelled in most instances for them to enroll those particular, you know, properties. Why the purpose of enrollment, Chair? The enrollment is critical because it's meant actually, you know, to protect, you know, the interest of the consumer, that in also in affordable, you know, houses, if the project is not enrolled, then therefore it means to say that there won't be that sufficient cover that I've already mentioned, Chairperson. So it's very critical that, you know, we're going to compare all these particular ratios of government, we're going to compare any implementing agent that we're going to use in our space as and when we do affordable housing, that they need to, you know, to and load up their houses. Chairperson, those are the three or four elements that I've emphasized. But now I'll go back, Chairperson, to the presentation in the main, you know, to take you through and the honorable members in terms of all those particular issues that I've highlighted, which are of critical importance for us to highlight. Chairperson, if you look at the background, I won't dwell much into the background, is that in this particular piece of legislation, we are not only amending, we are repeating. Why we are repeating? We are repeating, Chairperson, because all those fundamental issues, key point of emphasis that I've mentioned earlier, are the ones that are very critical, because they made it to say that we need to repeal this piece of legislation in the interest of the consumer, in the interest of ensuring that as and when somebody build their beautiful houses or whatever they engage in the construction space, they know for a fact that a Chairperson will be protected actually, you know, through this particular warranty. Chairperson, if you look now into the second slide, Chairperson, dealing with the main, with the issue that relating to what is the current act made provision for? And the second part it provides in terms of what we are
proposing. The slides are not moving.
Chair, can you see that?
We see the first slide. The second slide is not. We can see it from the side, but can you maybe put it in the presentation?
Can you okay. See,
yeah. Yes, sir. Thank you. Oh. You can enlarge it more.
Can you see, Chair?
Yes, we can see. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Now, Chairperson, I'm going to take you through some of the provisions of the bill which are very critical, like I've indicated. Chairperson, if you look in terms of the definition of the principal act, which is the current act, it will provide, Chairperson, in terms of the definition of what we define to be a home. It will exclude the boarding houses, it will exclude hostels, it will exclude institutional, you know, facilities. And then what is critical, Chairperson, with regard to that particular definition, it will also deal with the issue of the mixed-use development constructed with less than 75% of the floor area designed for residential purposes. Let me qualify that, Chair. The issue of the 75%, you know, provision and regulation, it applies as follows. Chairperson and honorable members will be aware that sometimes if you go to these mixed developments, like for example, in the shopping centers, you'll find that maybe at the top of the shops there you'll find some residential accommodation that is provided there. Chairperson, in the period of our research and analysis and also the experience that we've got, is that you'll find that now that because of the 75% provision, you'll find that most of the developers and as and when they're developing the mixed development, they will basically abuse this particular 75% provision to say that no, for them, in order for them not to enroll their particular development, for them not to enroll the development, they will go now to say, look, the development in terms of our own development does not necessarily over and above the 75% provision that is provided for in terms of the act. And therefore, Chairperson, what is important is that as a result thereof, then you'll find that if people now are renting or are staying in those particular residential accommodation on top of those particular shops, you'll find that they'll never be covered or they are not even protected in terms of the warranty that we're talking about, either in respect of the structural defect or the roof leaks or any other protection that is provided in terms of the act. So now what we're trying to do in terms of the new bill, Chairperson, we are going to do away with the 75% provision. What we're saying is that as long as the dwelling is for residential purposes, therefore you need to enroll that particular, you need to enroll that particular project. Because the reason why, Chairperson, we want also to afford and extend the protection of the warranty cover also to those people that find themselves residing on top of those particular shops or those complexes or in those mixed development, because the contractors before, they were abusing this particular 75% provision. So this particular 75% provision, Chairperson, we want basically to work with it and extend the protection of cover, you know, to the, you know, to the residents that find themselves staying in those mixed developments. Chairperson, the other point that I'm going to emphasize is the point of the definition in terms of the home builder. Like, for example, I've indicated earlier on in my area of emphasis, you know, I've already alluded to the fact that in the new definition, what we're going to include, we're going to include provision in terms of section one of the definition. We're going to include the issue of repairs. We're going to include the issue of renovations. We're going to include the issue of alterations. And we're going to include the extension which necessitates submission of building plans and conversion, both in residential and otherwise. So we're going to say that in that particular space, as and when you are engaging in that particular process of alteration, you know, extension and so forth, those particular individuals must also be afforded that opportunity for their particular warranty card. Chairperson, the other definition, we are going to deal with the issue that the Act was not made provision for. It was the issue that relating to the definition of what constitutes to be a day, what constitutes to be an MEC. And also we're going to include now, Chairperson, the issue of the definition of what is an MMC. Why we want to include the MMC, Chairperson? Because if you look in terms of most of our responsibilities, you'll agree with me that the build environment is also a build, it's also a sector that, you know, cut across. You'll find that there are certain responsibilities that will be bestowed upon the MEC. There will be the responsibilities that, you know, are basically should be adhered to or bestowed upon the MMC. For example, Chairperson, in the instances that we have given the USDG actually, you know, to the municipality, like for example, to the metro. So you'll find that the responsibility in terms of ensuring that whatever the project that they are going to undertake as a metro under the USDG grant, they make sure to say that that particular project is enrolled. And that responsibility will be solely on the shoulders of the MMC in that regard, as opposed to the MEC. But as and when the project is a provincial project that undertaken by the project, we want actually not to put the liability solely in the hands of the MEC to make sure that, you know, they ensure that the project as they undertake in the area of space actually, you know, get enrolled. Because we find in certain instances, Chairperson, that some of the other projects that we undertake as human settlement using the different grants, sometimes the province or the municipality don't even enroll those particular projects. So now we want to make it legislative and mandatory, and also should be a punitive measure in terms of making sure that if you're going enroll, then there should be consequences for that. Chairperson, there also the issue that relating to the calendar, I'm not going to bore you with that, so that we make an explicit definition, what is the calendar day. Chairperson, the other issue that is very critical that we're going to deal with, that the bills covers, that we're going to, that the members need to note of, is the issue of the owner builder exemption, which is currently provided for in terms of section 10. Now, Chairperson, in terms of the new legislation, the new proposed bill, what we're trying to say, Chair, we are saying that in certain instances, the minister may exempt any person or the home in exceptional circumstances. We're going to provide for exceptional circumstances why that particular person must be exempted. And therefore, Chairperson, we are looking at what will be in the public interest. We'll only deal with the issue of fundamental issue that the exemption can only be granted if the exemption is only in the public interest. And only if the exemption is not contrary to the objectives and certain conditions as provided for in terms of the Act. So we're providing for that particular circumstance to share, but we're not going to have just a general exemption proviso that is provided for, like in terms of the current Act, that, you know, you can be exempted if you want to be owner builder, and then we find that particular process being abused. So what we want to do, we want to qualify to say that if you've got an interest actually for you to become an owner builder, then there should be a particular process that we have to follow. And in particular, we must look at specific areas, you know, that they need to have a look at. Chairperson, the other issue that is very important that we're dealing with in terms of this particular piece of the proposed bill is the issue that related to the composition of the board. You may be aware, Chair, that in the current piece of legislation, we're dealing with the establishment of the council. But in terms of the new legislation, The old act, there is no specific reference to the specific expertise and skill that is called, you know, to participate or to form part of the board. Like, for example, Chairperson, it has been a call, both in our own engagement in the information session and also at some point they've been raised also in cabinet, was the issue relating to the specific skill set that is required to serve in the board. You don't have to, you know, to call for every, you know, interested public, you know, member to apply in the board, but we are calling for specific, you know, expertise, for specific knowledge, you know, to be in the board. For example, Chairperson, the one that came out very strong was that given that the NHBRC plays a role critically in the built environment, we need to have a skill of a person with a town planning and property development expertise, for example, over and above what you're proposing. So we needed to make that particular specific call, Chairperson, that given the environment that we operate, given the environment that NHBRC is at, we needed to have that particular kind of expertise of town planning and property development expertise so that they can assist in the main the institution to carry out its own constitutional and legislative mandate. The other point, Chair, is the issue that relating to the composition. As we know that we are repealing, we do have a transitional provision that in the name of the, you know, council, now we're going to you know, a different name, the National Home Builders Regulatory Council, you know, which a specific distinction, you know, that is provided for, that, for example, as a juristic person can be sued or be sued in its own name, it will have its own executive authority, you know, that is vested actually, you know, within the minister's executive authority, and as a board, as an oversight, and as an accounting authority over the entity. That is exactly, Chairperson, the corporate governance process that is applicable across all the other entities that we've established over the period of time, over, you know, within government. Chairperson, the other issue that is very critical and is important is the issue of an appointment of the CEO and the CFO. If you look in terms of the current act, it makes provision that the council must appoint the CEO and the appointment thereof, the CEO will be in the main responsible for the appointment, you know, of the other entire staff, you know, of the organization and so forth, and including the CFO. So that is exactly what is currently provided for. But what we're trying to do, Chairperson, to slightly, you know, improve in terms of the corporate governance processes and focus is that what we wanted to do is that the bill proposes that the appointment of both, you know, the CEO and the CFO should be the responsibility of the board to do. So the board will, of course, do that in consultation after, you know, although in the process they will be responsible for the appointment, and therefore they'll do that in a consultation with the minister, of course. But I'm saying, Chairperson, the critical point will be that let's give that particular responsibility and advance corporate governance. Let that responsibility be vested upon the board to appoint both the CEO and the CFO respectively. The other issue, Chairperson, is about the current registration of the home builder and the expansion of the home builder database. So what we are saying, Chairperson, in terms of the current act, it makes provision that the council to keep the register of home builders and make no reference to the integrated database and so forth. But what we're trying to do in terms of the new proposed bill, Chair, we're trying to link, you know, the registration process and the database registration, you know, with the grading requirements. Like, for example, you find that the NHBRC is not only going to work, you know, isolatedly, actually, you know, isolated, and deal with the matters alone and deal with issues. It has to integrate, like, for example, the system with the, you know, the grading, you know, council, and also you have to integrate actually the system, you know, with either the CSOS, for example, of course, actually with the, you know, PPRA, for example, in the main, because you'll find that certain developers, you know, in certain instances, they become property practitioners. You know, some certain developers also become a managing agent, you know, dealing with the management of their own complexes and so forth. So what we want to do, we want to integrate the economic system, the database, and to ensure the reliable information to facilitate the management and the policy decision, Chairperson. The other aspect, Chairperson, honorable members, is the registration of developers and enrollment of homes. The Act requires currently that the Act requires the registration of a developer but does not clearly put the responsibility regarding the enrollment. Like I've indicated in the areas of emphasis, you know, earlier, Chairperson, to say, look, we want to make sure that clear that the bill applies to both the developer and the home builder and clarify the role of the developer in respect of the enrollment. To say that, look, all of you as a owner involved in the development, you know, of any kind or any development that relating, you know, to any dwelling, you know, you need the importance of enrollment. The enrollment is very critical because, Chairperson, why want to emphasize the enrollment, Chair and honorable members, is to make sure that we want to extend the protection of this particular cover, actually not to the consumers, that the consumers must be covered. Because if failure to enroll in that particular project, it means to say that it's a detriment now to the consumer in the main. Chairperson, the other issue that we are going to deal with is also the issue that related to the appropriation, you know, of the funds, you know, of the entity. The bill makes provision, Chair, as it stands, that for money appropriated from Parliament in addition to the existing revenue streams, and the bill makes provision for the use of the surplus towards the warranty funds, towards the development programs, like I've indicated, Chair. The bill makes provision that we can, of course, utilize a particular portion of the surplus fund of the warranty, actually, towards the developmental programs, you know, towards transformation, and as and when, you know, it deems necessary, you know, for the authority itself or for the council or for the board itself, you know, to utilize the particular fund for their particular purpose. The reason why we want to do that, Chairperson, notwithstanding that, you know, we might be, you know, boasting or proud to say, look, if we got about 6 billion or 7 billion, but you must remember that there might be some instances that might have been a class action. So then deplete the funds. So we need to make a provision that in the instance that the entity itself is unable to can, you know, raise revenue for whatever reason, Chairperson, then it can, of course, have a lens in terms of approaching, you know, a parliament, let's say, for example, you know, to go back to the fiscal sector for them to assist. But we don't anticipate that to happen, Chairperson, if really that we have about, you know, over 7 billion that we can go back and, you know, and do that. But you'll never know, as I'm saying, that we might have a class action that might, of course, find ourselves in the situation. So we need to legislate, you know, in future so that there might be that particular kind of mischief. That is the essence of us in terms of drafting that we need to cover for those particular, you know, unforeseen circumstances. The Chairperson, the other issue that we want to bring in into the bill is the issue of the non-profit company under Section 39, that the bill makes provision for the establishment of a non-profit company for the purpose of risk-based insurance offerings in relation to the structural integrity of the home. That we need to make sure to make that particular kind of provision, Chair, that within the context that I've indicated, that there is, of course, the provision of something that you can use, to which extent that you can use this particular non-profit company, which will be independent, you know, established to make sure that that particular, you know, risk-based insurance is provided so that we have different offerings that will extend basically the interest and also the protection of the consumer in the main, Chairperson. That is exactly the essence of that particular, you know, the fund that we want to do. Chair, the other critical point that I've highlighted, you know, from the beginning when I was saying that I wanted to bring to the attention of the honorable members some of the critical areas of emphasis that we want to do is basically this particular issue that relating to the warranty cover from the date of occupation. The current Act, Chair, it made provision for the fixed 5 years, you know, a structural defect, and then the extension actually for 12 months roof leak. So what we want to do, Chairperson, is that now in terms of the warranty cover, what we're proposing in terms of this bill, Chairperson, I say the warranty cover should commence from the construction date. It must commence from the construction date, Chairperson, because like I've indicated, there are so many things that can happen in between while we are constructing a new house, from the foundation to the wall plate. The inspectors can come and demolish, and therefore the cost will go and revert back to the consumer. So what we're trying to do there, we're saying, let the cover be from the date of commencement of the construction. And the other point, Chairperson, is that the roof leak, for example, we're saying that we want to go out aggressively for consumer awareness, Chairperson. Remember, the roof leak, if you are covered for 12 months for the roof leak, it means that you don't have, in the main, you have to go to your private insurance, whatever people are doing that, and then for them, make sure to get the cover for the roof leak. But you must know for a fact that consumers ought to know, Chairperson. It's embedded upon ourselves to do the most important consumer awareness, as set out in terms of the bill as well, to say that there is a cover for you that if you go to roof leak, if your house, you know, is of course covered for the period of 2 years. To cover for the period of 2 years, don't go to the private, you know, insurance for you actually to go back to the NHBRC for them actually not to deal with the issue of the, you know, of the roof leak. The same applies, Chairperson, in terms of the consumer awareness, to say that in terms of the structural defect, if there is a structural defect, don't go to private, you know, insurance that would do it, to say, look, don't go there, but just something that there is a fixed period of 5 years for a structural defect. If there is a structural defect, go to the NHBRC, lodge a claim, then they will know how to process that particular claim and go after the particular constructor and any other mechanism that you have to utilize, Chairperson. So that is exactly the point. Others, Chairperson, in our information session, by the way, to inform the committee that they've been attributing this particular warranty fund, which is sitting at 8 billion, to say that, you know, the consumers are not aware that they need to go back to the, you know, to the warranty fund, to the NHBRC, if they experience a structural defect or a roof leak, you know, before they go to their private insurance for that particular period to set out for them to claim. So there's been that particular kind of, you know, expression that has been coming out from the, you know, from the public at large to say we need to do more consumer awareness to make sure that people access this particular fund. But that particular fund does not seem to be that particular surplus of over six to four billion. So, Chairperson, I think that is the issue that we're going to deal with, you know, in terms of consumer protection that I've already alluded to. The second aspect, Chair, that we're going to deal with is the issue that relating to the minimum and the maximum amount payable from the warranty fund. Remember, Chairperson, in terms of the current Act, the Act empowers the Minister to prescribe the amount from time to time. So what we're trying to do in terms of the new proposed bill, we're saying, Chair, that the bill should basically retain that particular provision to say, look, let the powers be with the Minister still with regards to the prescribed minimum amount that need to be payable, you know, under, you know, as and when the consumer wants a claim, you know, against the fund. So there will be those particular circumstances that are going to prescribe under the regulation, Chairperson. Many of the issues will prescribe under the regulation, will deal with those particular kind of provisions, those circumstances that will be prescribed to say the minister still have to prescribe the circumstances upon which, yeah, the powers upon which the maximum amount that can be claimed against the fund. We're doing that, Chairperson, in terms of making sure that we don't deplete the fund. You know, if somebody, you know, can lodge a claim against the fund of about 5 billion, you must remember to say that will be the end of the organization. So we don't want to go to that level. So we want to have circumstances upon which a person must give us substantive and compelling reason as to why, you know, their particular claim qualifies their particular amount. So that is why we want to retain those particular powers basically to the minister. The other aspect, Chairperson, is the issue of adjudication of contractual dispute between the home builder and the home consumer, which is provided for in terms of the, you know, of the current, also in terms of the new. What we are trying to do, Chairperson, in terms of the new one, you know, on section 56, 57, 58, we want to make sure that the provision referred to the dispute adjudication in terms of the procedure that will be prescribed. The regulation will prescribe the process and the procedures and the time frame upon which one have to lodge a referral, you can go for adjudication of a dispute between the home builder and the consumer. But the critical point, Chair, of this in the main is that the council may prescribe conditions, you know, and monetary threshold for adjudication services at the cost of the council. They can, of course, do that. It happens, Chairperson, in different jurisdictions that as and when you refer the matter, you know, for adjudication purposes, that of course, you know, that the cost that might be incurred in the process. The same happened within our own sector when, you know, you refer a dispute at the CSOS, you know, Section Attorney Scheme on that service, you know, there are certain referral costs and fees that you have to pay, but of course there will be at the minimum, you know, costs, you know, in terms of the service. But that will be prescribed, Chairperson, in terms of the regulation. The regulation should be very clear and explicit in terms of how to refer the matter for adjudication. If you've got a dispute, there is a matter that needs to be adjudicated between the home builder and the consumer. The consumer, they must be given the better protection and access. Chairperson, there's also a provision that is provided for in terms of the bill, the appointment of the compliance and enforcement committee in terms of section 1. The bill makes provision, Chair, that the minister must appoint the enforcement and the compliance and enforcement committee. The enforcement and the compliance committee, Chairperson, is going to be an independent body that is going to be making sure to say it deal with all those particular issues relating to matters of corruption, conflict of interest, using confidential information for personal use benefit, and extended action to them will also be extended to this particular committee. This particular committee, Chairperson, will be responsible for those particular instances. Remember, in terms of the current Chairperson, the DC itself is a committee of council and therefore appointed, you know, by such by the council. So we are going to make sure that we elevate much of the responsibility in terms of that particular body that is currently called the DC body now. We are going to make sure that the minister appoint more inclined to be seen independent body that is going to assume all the particular functions that will be dealt with by the DC body. But now we want to restore that responsibility upon the minister to do.
So recording stopped.
So that you should not be seen to say, you know, the council itself or the board itself, you know, is a referee and a player. So I can't refer the matter then because these people, anyway, they're going to deal with my matter, not through the affirmative, because in any event, you know, they've appointed those particular DC body. They are responsible for doing it. So we want to be seen to be independent, that the minister assumed that responsibility. Then I said, unlike the council appointing their particular DC body in the current form, as it is, because there is that limitation that we have also experienced when we were, you know, doing the information session in the department, that there were never that kind of element of uncomfortability of the, you know, from the consumer to say, look, if the council appoints the same body that is going to adjudicate on my own matter, you know, they're going to do that in their own interest, but not in the interest of the consumer. So now that's the reason why we're giving this responsibility to the minister. And then Chairperson, the bill also prescribed the minimum period upon which that particular council should serve, and you know to do that. So as I'm saying, you know, they won't be appointed perpetually and then remain permanent members. They will, of course, if you're dealing with issues, you know, the minimum period will be the period of 4 years. The other issue, Chair, is the issue that relating to the provisions of enforcement and penalties for contravention of the, you know, of the act, of course, and that will be adjudicated upon by the committee that I've referred to. Chairperson, I want to qualify this fine issue and the issue that relating to the penalties. If you look in terms of the current act, the fine is prescribed to be a fine not exceeding about 25,000 and a warning withdrawal of registration. You'll agree with me, Chairperson, that if, for example, the big construction companies in the main, you know, for them, you know, it's not much of an issue for them to pay 25,000. Like, for example, they'll do the, you know, they will contravene the act and the regulation and the, you know, as prescribed, and then as a result, you know, they will not even enroll even when they are over 75 or not in a mixed development. But what they'll do, they'll simply just pay the 25,000. That 25,000 penalty, Chairperson, we have realized over the period of time, during the implementation of this principal act, that it has been just a drop in the ocean for them. So what we wanted to do, Chair, we are saying that we need now to go deep into their pocket to ensure that there is compliance, there is, of course, enrollment. What we are going to do, Chairperson, we are proposing that we should, of course, the penalty should be 10% of the profit, you know, of the project value. That if you are found to be in contravention of this legislation, you are found not to have enrolled in whatever, in any other form, we are not going to pay 25,000 as it is now. What we're going to do, we're going to go deep into your pocket and say, it's 10% of the project value. Then it can be 100% of the remedial cost as expended. And then we might also, even the maximum fine can be up to 1 million. So that they know for a fact that if the maximum fine can be at up until 1 million, then they know for a fact that sometimes it will, of course, deter the maker, you know, from contravening the piece of legislation. You'll agree with me, Chair, Honourable Member, that sometimes, you know, if the penalty is too deep, you know, sometimes it becomes a remedial a factor, to enforce, compliance in the main. And Chairperson, we also make provision that we may impose alternative to another appropriate relief in line with the objectives of the Act. So that is why the particular committee, Chairperson, the Compliance and Enforcement Committee, is got a huge responsibility on these shoulders, to deal with all these particular matters of non-compliance and enforcement of the compliance. So that is a great thing, the point that why we want to elevate the particular body, not to the council itself, but it must all be elevated to the minister to deal with. Chair, the other critical point that I'm going to deal with, which is currently dealt with in terms of the new Act, is the role of inspectors. Chair, the role of inspectors have been raised in many instances. Like, for example, in our consultation, also in Cabinet, they've been raised to say that, look, in our space, why do we find all the time that there are houses that are falling within 2 years? Where was the NHBRC? Where were the inspectors? And both the inspectors of the municipality, both the inspectors of the NHBRC. So, Chairperson, that is a very critical role that we wanted to emphasize and also to put it in the main to say, sometimes we have to present, to prevent all this particular kind of, defects happening. If we had inspectors in place executing their work and basically be on site, the positive duties of the inspectors, Chair, is to determine the compliance with the Act of the home builders. That's one of the functions. And therefore, Chairperson, the duties of the inspector relating to issues that relating to personal interest, anti-corruption, and all these other issues that we want to bring in terms of ensuring that we bring the integrity, into the space of inspectors in order for them to execute their responsibility and their duties with integrity. We want to bring some other issues in terms of their code of conduct, how they have to conduct themselves in the space, Chairperson, as and when they are conducting their work. Inspectors, investigators, they have to be given powers to police officers in terms of the Procedure Act, and also to make sure that they've got those particular kind of responsibility of ensuring that their powers and functions are confined and are being executed within the confinement actually of the law. Chair, I must emphasize the point that was raised also, Chair, in our information session, was that how do we integrate the role that is played by the different inspectors, at different spheres of government. Like, for example, the role of inspectors of the municipality, like if you build the municipality, they will come as well to come and inspect, they will go and take their notes, whatever they have to do, tick the boxes and go, that's their responsibility in terms of their own legislation that binds them. And then the NHBRC will also send the same inspector to do the same other work, but in line with the provisions of the Act. The other issue that came up very clearly from the public was that how do we engage to that extent that we make for the better performance and for the better protection of the consumer? Why can't we align the responsibility of the inspectors in both the municipality at the council level and also from the NHBRC level? So that is the issue, Chairperson, that we are greatly concerned with to make sure that when that assignment is done. Why that is important, Chairperson? It was important that if, for example, you go to Bushbuck Ridge, you'll find that there won't be enough inspectors, to go and inspect. Let's say on the side of the NHBRC, for an example, to go and send inspectors, to go to Bushbuck Ridge to ensure that, this particular, house of development is enrolled, it complies with that. So how do we utilize, the inspectors that are used by the municipality to do their particular responsibility, also to do the check and balance in respect of that one of the NHBRC. But it's a major Chairperson that we have to work, the institution have to work on it and deal with it, as and when the Act may be implemented or so forth. But that's the issue that we need, to have a look at it greatly, Chairperson and honorable members. The other aspect, Chair, is the issue that relating to interdicts and also the suspected non-compliance. But any person may report suspected non-compliance to the NHBRC, or the council may apply to court for the order directing the person to comply, also even to stop the construction if there's no compliance. But that would be, after the exercise that I've already alluded to of the inspectors. And Chair, I'm not going to bore you much in terms of the clarification, clarification of the inspector's role, and what will be the role of the inspectors, and what will be the role of the inspectors in accordance or pursuant to what I've explained earlier on in relation to the role of the important role that has to be played by the compliance and enforcement committee. The other important aspect here, as I'm about to conclude, is the issue that's an initiative. If you look in terms of the current act, the act ensures that the home builder is registered and the home is enrolled prior to the approval of the bond, registration of the bond and approval of the housing project, housing subsidy grant and payment of that home builder. It's a process that is currently provided in terms of the current legislation. What we are trying, Chairperson, to advance in the main should be the protection of the consumer, is the duty to ascertain if the home is enrolled. Enrollment is critical to every feature that I've already presented. Not only to approve or to continue the payment, or to register the bond, or to inform the buyer or the housing consumer of questions of non-enrollment, to report to council if not enrolled. We're not only leaving it, you know, to the consumer and to the home builder. We're also extending the responsibility to other role players that are playing a role in a housing transaction itself as a whole. You know, in the main, to say like, if financial institutions is funded through the proper process, they need to require to say whether we fund or before the commencement, is it enrolled? We go to the next point to say whether the bond answer before they transfer, whatever the role that they have to play in a property transaction, they also have to play a role in that particular instance. Their responsibility is to play their particular critical role. Chair, I'll leave this particular role, which is very important, to the other piece of legislation that we have done, in the sense that it is not a new thing that we're doing, in the sense that we have also played a responsibility on the conveyancer in terms of the PPRA Act, to say that before they pay a commission, you know, to the property practitioner, they must make sure that the property practitioner is in possession of the valid FHC. It's a very important responsibility.
Recording in progress.
Bestowed upon them, but it's upon them to make sure that when before they pay, then they must make sure that their particular project is enrolled. So the duty of the register of deeds, you know, of deeds, register of deeds has been removed, Chairperson, of this office is concerned with the registration and not necessarily with the home itself. So we just want to give them proper space in terms of dealing with their own matters that falls within their own jurisdiction. The MEC and the MMC, Chairperson, have the duty not to release the funds, like I've indicated earlier on, for the fund for the housing project, unless the project is enrolled. I've indicated, Chairperson, that the responsibility in terms of a housing project, because we have experienced that kind of non-compliance by both the province and also the municipality in terms of not enrolling this particular housing. That's why you find that the NHBRC cannot therefore play a role in that instance. Now, we are putting it, Chairperson, that it should be the responsibility of both the MEC and the MMC has a duty not to release the funds either at the USDG or HSDG for council for the failure, you know, to enroll the project. The council must report failure by the MMC and the MEC to report to appoint a registered home builder or to enroll the project, you know, of a home to the minister. The responsibility is to make sure that the minister is informed that this particular project, there is a risk of the money that you have transferred through USDGs to SDGDG, that that particular project in this particular municipality or this particular province is not enrolled. So we are putting the responsibility on them to inform. They should not just ignore that particular responsibility, Chairperson. That is the most important fundamental responsibility that we are providing for in terms of this particular bill, Chair. I think, Chairperson, those are the most important aspects that we wanted to bring before the portfolio committee and honorable members for them to consider in terms of what is that we are doing in terms of this, what is that we are proposing to do in terms of the new housing consumer protection, and what is consumer protection about this particular bill. You know, we have already actually advanced those particular kind of reasons, Chairperson, as to why this particular bill is important and why this particular bill needs actually not to be to be processed, because the response that we got as a department as and when we did it, you know, with the information session was that, you know, the public at large and also the sector itself, they're waiting for this particular bill so that the extension of the consumer should be protected. But in the main channel, like I've indicated, consumer awareness, education is very critical in order for us to measure ourselves that we have succeeded or will succeed, you know, eventually in the implementation of this particular legislation. That is the biggest elephant in the room, Chairperson. But as I stand now, Chairperson, that was the last slide. And I want to thank you, Chairperson, and Honourable Mayor, for this opportunity. Thank you very much, as I rest.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nguyen.
Nguyen, Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. DDG Cheney and DDG Mano, any addition?
None from my side, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just the emphasis from my side is that the bill is focusing on the protection of the consumer, which then also then dictates that more communication should be addressed so that the consumer knows also how to get access to the warranty cover should the need be. And also also that the bill also has elevated the areas of economic transformation by recognizing the macellaries that we have in this country, that they also need further training so that they can be properly registered, because they know how to do the work, but they don't have the paperwork. So that also they can participate fully working for themselves. And then the area that also we have been grappling with in the sector in terms of our compliance with NHBRC is the issue that is addressing the role of the inspectors to the point that where there is unwarranted approvals that are being advanced, the inspectors also will be addressed, their conduct will be addressed up to the point of being deregistered as the inspectors. And lastly, Chairperson, is that database in terms of the registered builders and their gradings that will also assist the sector in terms of knowing the builders that we've got at what level and how are they advancing. And this is also in relation to economic transformation that we need to address as a sector. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DDG. Thank you very much again. Let me welcome members to interact with the presentation, question for clarities and inputs that members might want to make. And I see in the those that wants to speak, honorable members, you're welcome.
Chairperson. Chairperson.
Honorable, thank you.
Hey, there's noise here. Mokelinting, I hope you're well. Chair,
yes, we
can we go to the slide 34? I think that talks about, is it section or clause 34?
I've noted Honorable Powell first, Honorable Tick.
Oh, sorry.
Hi, Chair. Please excuse me. I'm not going to turn on my video because we've got load shedding and the signal is not stable. I'll try and be as quick as I can. Thank you to the department for presenting. And I would like to welcome the following changes. I'd like to welcome the extension of the period of cover under the warranty fund from the date of commencement until 5 years after the date of certification. I'd like to welcome the warranty period for roof leaks being extended from 2 to 5 years. I'd like to welcome that the draft bill determines that a home builder or a developer that's not registered still has the same liability as a registered home builder. I think that this is going to ensure the protection of unsuspecting consumers who might not be aware of who they're contracting and the requirements of the existing act. And then also the fact that the draft bill provides for the principals of a company to be personally held accountable. And in the same vein, the definition of a person will be extended, if the bill is passed, will be extended to include a trust, as some home builders are actually trusts. Chairperson, I have gone through this draft bill with my legislative researchers, and we've identified a number of potential shortcomings that we would like the department to take note of and to provide responses here. So I'm just going to be reading, I won't be long, I've only got about 4 or 5 points, but I am going to just be reading from the briefing that we've drafted together. So something that is of concern to me is that the bill places an obligation on the National Home Builders Registration Council to establish and maintain a register of home builders and developers. So what this means is that every person or entity who wants to build a home, whether it's for personal use or part of someone's business, will have to apply to the NHBRC to be registered as a home builder and will have to prescribe pay the prescribed annual fee. The NHBRC will also be required to keep a record of each and every home that is to be built, and this will place burdens on both the NHBRC and the home builders and developers to enroll each and every home before construction commences, as well as to pay the prescribed enrollment fees. I have a question of clarity here. If somebody in the department can please take note, does this apply to home builders who self-build? So for example, in a number of the, RDP or BNG housing developments that I visit, people who've been given title then build on back rooms that they then rent out. Would somebody, for example, who has got title to a BNG home, and it's now obviously their home, who builds a back room, will those people have to register with the NHBRC and pay the prescribed enrollment fee? And then my second question is, if I, as Emma Louise Powell, decide that I want to renovate my home, and I contract with a builder, is it myself as the homeowner who's managing the build, or is it just the builder that I contract that has to register? So can we just have clarity on that? Then should a home builder or a developer not comply with the requirement of registration at the NHBRC or enroll the homes which he or she is building, such a home builder or developer will be guilty of an offense or a fine not exceeding 1.5 million rand or imprisonment. So the current act sets that fine at 25,000 rand or obviously imprisonment as contained in the current act. I'm concerned. We live in a country where people don't always have access to information and to good information. I'm concerned that, let's say, my friend Tubela in Witzand decides to build on a back room and she doesn't know about this act. And I know that in the law, that's not an excuse, but let's just use this hypothetical situation. She doesn't comply. 1.5 million rand is a huge amount of money. Now, I understand that this is necessary in the case of big developers, people in leafy suburbs who are doing extensions, that kind of thing, because that hits people in the pocket. But, you know, somebody, a smaller build in a poorer community, I'm concerned about this 1.5 million rand threshold. Is it fair, just, and equitable? And my question here is, will it be up to the courts to determine this fine, or will the Act prescribe thresholds in terms of reaching this 1.5 million rand? Then My next comment and question is the duty that the bill places on estate agents, financial institutions, conveyances, and the register of deeds to confirm before they proceed with a property transaction whether the property constitutes a home as defined in the bill, and whether the home is enrolled with the NHBRC, and if it's not so enrolled to notify the NHRBC accordingly. A conveyancer now bears an additional duty to also report non-compliance to the Registry of Deeds, and estate agents have an additional duty to notify prospective buyers that the home has not been enrolled. And now, if the parties don't comply with this duty, they can obviously be reported to various oversight bodies, the previous, or the PPRA, the Financial Services Board, the Law Society, the AG. So this is now extending the watchdog function over home builders and developers further to include external parties who also have obligations to confirm compliance with the bill. Is this not creating, you know, in South Africa, we've got one common goal, and that's to ensure that people are able to access jobs and provide for themselves and their families, and to make sure that the ease of doing business legislation is it's rolled out across all departments. So this just seems to place laborious bureaucratic red tape burdens that can potentially delay building disputes quite significantly. Can I just please get some clarity on that? I just want to go through. And then there's a couple more comments. Now that we've got the workshop, I'm just going to go through after some consultations with the private sector, just preliminary consultations. I note that reference to inspectors and their training requirements, but find no further reference. Consideration should please be given to outsourcing these positions to MBA, RICS registered building surveyors so that we can finally align with international standards. I note that the board will contain competent practitioners, and that's something that we welcome. And I think that we potentially should look at including environmental and health backgrounds in terms of what those various professions included in terms of board representation need to represent. I just want to go down. So council inspector qualifications and managerial roles may need some defining in relation to principal agent duties, because there seems to be some form of a duplication here. And then just one comment, not necessarily applicable here, but potentially could be addressed, is that adjudication is not enforceable under the Arbitration Act unless it's agreed by both parties. And the correct process would obviously be a referral to the Master Builders Association for dispute resolution as per the MBA home building contract. There's no litigation option at current. So the suggestion here is that arbitration should further be restricted, because currently the NHBRC can't handle the amounts of complaints, and most adjudication has to be done on papers in Pretoria. So the suggestion in terms of adjudication in respect of disputes is that this should be devolved to a regional function. I'm not sure if that's something that this current act can address. Two last comments. No, actually, I'm going to leave those out. Chairperson, those are my contributions and questions and comments for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Powell. Honorable Mokgoto.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson.
I welcome the workshop. And there are some points that I think have not been mentioned in the bill that I suggest they should be included. And then those points are the state through state housing construction company should improve the size and the quality of low cost houses, and also the size of RDP houses. And then again, the state should regulate housing finance through providing housing finance that does not exceed a period of 10 years. And all settlements led by the state should have bulk services such as water provision, electricity, sewer system, and tarred roads or paved roads, especially where you find currently most of the RDP houses where they are built by the Department of Human Settlement, you find that there are no bulk services, but the houses are already built. And when the construction company finishes building the houses, you know, the people are just, or the people that are supposed to occupy the houses, they are given keys to occupy the houses in areas where there is no electricity, or in areas where there are no, where there is no sewer system, or there are no paved or tarred roads. And then again, the bill is also silent on this point. The bill does not state to the home builder or the private construction company who's developing a residential area to make sure that when that home builder or private construction company build residential houses, that company should make sure that there are the service is not the service, I meant to say the site is fully serviced. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, honorable members. Let me remind honorable members that the bill is with Parliament. The department has done their job. The bill is with Parliament to take it over and finalize it and engage communities and until it becomes an act. So department, they've actually tabled the bill to Parliament. So it's the responsibility of Parliament to finalize the bill and get input from communities. That's why we said the department must come and workshop us so that we understand what are they saying better, so that when we are going to engage communities, we engage communities ourselves having clarity. What is the intention of the bill? What are the those issues that have been repealed? And then allow communities to make inputs. So I just wanted to clarify that now the department would only clarify what is entailed in the bill. And making inputs is the responsibility of Parliament now.
Honorable Mokoto. I just want to know, the department is workshopping us on the bill, which according to them is final. They did not want our input before they take the bill or put it in front of Parliament, and even before, you know, the public hearings. In other words, our views, you know, are not important. They just want us.
You remember, Honorable Mokoto, you remember we had a meeting with the briefing with the department on the bill, and they've actually came to us and brief us. We interrogate the bill, and then we then said, members said, before we go to public hearings, let's actually have a workshop and interact with the department and make the department to clarify us further, and so that when we go out, we're clear what is it that we're going to engage in. So we had that meeting. Let me allow
Chairperson, I'm not satisfied about your explanation. The reason we wanted the department to come and workshop us about the bill is because we wanted to understand exactly what is entailed in the bill so that we could also make some inputs. Make some inputs before that bill is sent to Parliament and it goes for public hearing.
No, Honorable Mokgotho, that's what I'm trying to clarify. Or the bill already is tabled with Parliament. The bill is the responsibility of Parliament to make
without us being afforded enough opportunity to engage with the bill.
Member Mokgotho, they had Honorable Mokgotho. I was just clarifying.
Chairperson?
Honorable Tseki and then Honorable Harold.
Chairperson, I think you are clarified. You are assisting us. This bill, it's now in front of Parliament, as you say. We are expected to make inputs, Member Mokgotho. We are going to listen to the public, and then after listening to the public, all inputs will be covered, and then as a committee, we'll make a presentation of all, even what Member Powell have said, all those issues will be covered depending on what we want to be in the bill. So you are still in order, Member Mokgotho, don't worry. The bill is not thrown to us without us having inputs. Chair, on my few points, I requested that if slide section 34, because I missed that totally, can be flighted again, as light as section 34. And Chair, on the mercenaries, Chair.
Who's speaking?
It's a Kino Abu.
But there is another voice behind.
Member Chafeni.
Okay.
Oh, Honorable Chafeni, I've noted Honorable Tseki. You'll follow after Honorable Heron.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, Chair.
Mercenaries that are small or that are not registered, if they take same responsibility as those that are registered, for you to be able to be a builder, you must be registered with NHBRC, and there's a fee that is payable there. Can we get clarity probably on the capacity of those mercenaries, DDG, on whether will they be able to sustain these payments versus the penalties that they could suffer? And what about the areas where you find that these are communal land? In this communal land, you have a mercenary who does buildings, but he just does building as without being registered with this institution. And as a communal land, can you claim from NHRBC as well in a communal land that is led by the chiefs? That's one. The other one, Chair, is about plans. There are areas where you'll find that this is a structure coming up, and by your own assessment, you'll find that this structure, the way it is placed, it may not have been registered with NHRBC. Are there processes for a sorry? NHBRC, am I saying it wrongly? Are there processes probably whereby a client or an individual or a community member could be able, maybe as a whistleblower or whatever, to inform the NHBRC to say, in my own view, this structure, it's not the right way in which it has been built.
And therefore, I would request them to come and do an inspection. Is there a route of that nature, Chair? I think there's a message that a member DA have said in terms of the threshold. Well, I didn't understand the presentation on the threshold, if that can be repeated. But generally, Chair, I think all points are very positive, and I think they are taking us forward. The Chair, on the slide that is on the showing there. Okay, Chair, I'll just go through it. I may come back. Let me just go through it so that I can understand it. Thank you. Those were the two points, Chair, I wanted to raise.
Chairperson, on a point of order, it's Honorable Powell.
Yes, order sustained, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. May I kindly ask for your protection? I don't find it appropriate that when members make their contributions that they consistently and continuously refer to individual members of this committee. We are addressing the department under your chairpersonship, and I really don't think that it is right or fair for the constant personal references that are made, and I'd like Honorable Tseki to please be warned of such in future. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Tseki, can you address matters through the chair, not on what to other members?
Okay, no. Thank you, Chair. I thought maybe she doesn't want to be called DA, but I understand. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Harold.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the department for the presentation. I have questions or concerns relating to Section 32 and 33 of the bill. Both of those sections refer to the MEC, which is obviously the province, and the MMC. But it appears to me that the drafters of the bill have not really understood local government legislation, because an MMC is not the same as an MEC. An MMC doesn't have executive authority. And the way this is drafted, the MMC, so that's the member of the mayoral committee, may not release any funds. Now, no councillor or MMC will ever be in a position to withhold funds or to release them. And similarly with Section 33, the MMC, again, the member of the mayoral committee who doesn't have executive authority, cannot would be breaching the act if they appoint home builders for subsidized housing that are not registered. Now, MMCs are, again, as I say, not involved in the appointment of home builders, and in fact shouldn't be. So I'm not sure, maybe I'm misunderstanding what is intended here, but an MMC doesn't have the authority, the mandate, and is in fact prohibited by legislation from being involved in the administration of a council. Executive authority rests in the council and is delegated either to the municipal manager or the mayor, but the appointment of home builders to do social housing and the release of funds would be the responsibility of the municipal manager and not an MMC. So I'm concerned about that being in the bill because I don't think it's legally correct, and it is putting MMCs in a position that they actually do not occupy. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Harold. Honorable Tafeli. Honorable Tafeli.
Oh, Nkosi Chairperson, angazi nokuthi ngiyavakala na. Yeyi, inethiwekhi yangishaya la. Chairperson, yes, I'm here, Chair.
Yes, continue.
Chairperson, we are news one.
Yes. Yes, proceed, ma. Honorable Tafeni. Honorable Tafeni. Similarly, we've lost here. Just to add on one question which Honorable Zeki has spoken about of mercenaries, because they are not at the same level as you are going to provide training, are you going to categorize them in terms of their levels? Yeah, and then the second issue is the one that is raised by Honorable Harold. Just to add on that question, that municipality, again, they are not at the same level. You have those that have got executive powers and those that the council is responsible. How are you, how do you think we should handle that? Can we then get you to respond? We'll wait for Honorable Tafeni to come back.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to reiterate your point, and I don't want to be committing any sort of checks and balances.
Sorry, Chair, may I interrupt? I can't hear. I don't know if it's my system. Sorry, it's Honorable Heron.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you hear us?
Yes, you are saying, is it Honorable Chain? Is it Chain? Mr. Chain?
Yes, Chair. I'm here with Ms.
What are you saying?
No, I don't know. Member Heron indicated that he cannot hear.
Oh, okay. I was saying to add on his question. Is that if we were just saying MMC, when the municipalities, just to add on the question that he raised, you have the metros which has got the executive powers, you have those council that the executing authority lies with council itself. So if you are then limited to MMC, how do you think we should go about it? Because legislation wise, it might not be correct. The other one that I wanted to raise is on the economic transformation and the issue of the mercenaries that you'll be training so that they are able to participate. Just to add the question that in area, are you going to categorize them where you find, because they will not be at the same level. So how are you going to this training? I want to categorize them and so that you are able to, your training can have impact, if I may put like that. So you can then respond or give us clarity on those issues that we've raised.
Thank you, Chair. We'll do that. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Ngwenya to assist, and as well as the CEO of the NHBRC, particularly in relation to the training. But I think I just want to add on to the point that you made, Chair, that the bill is now Parliament's, for want of a better word. And obviously, in relation to the points of clarity, we can give that. And then obviously on some of the issues that may come out from your side in relation to changes, amendments or revisions, including after the public hearings, we will then do that. Chair, I'll cover the point around specifically in relation to the duties in respect of the MMC or MEC. Chair, this is only in respect of subsidized housing projects, where we indicate that an MEC or MMC may not delegate or may not release any funds unless the provisions of the Act have been complied with. So, Chair, one of the biggest issues we have at the moment is that you have a substantial amount of subsidized housing projects which are not enrolled. And what happens is that either the municipality or the province is the implementing agent. And what we find, so for example, in some of your oversight visits, you would have found that there are defects. And the project is then the implementing agent is either the province directly or the municipality. And then there's defects in a project that have not been enrolled. What we are wanting to do is to enforce the accountability and responsibility of MEC and MMC, because you will note, Chair, that in many respects, the MEC sometimes delegates and makes the municipality an implementing agent. And then in relation to delegations, the MMC is is normally delegated through mayoral committee or council to take then responsibility in relation to any of the projects that may be put in there. So Chair, that's just the one. I'm going to ask Songhez, I don't know if you want to cover points in relation to training. And then Crazy.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to honorable members. Chair, I'll respond to some of the few questions. And of course, I must agree, Chair, that those particular questions are really fair questions that necessarily are going to enhance this particular bill. I'll start with a question from Honorable Member Powell. You know, those are a very good point that we've raised. And in particular, I'll respond to the question that we have already observed, you know, that the issue that relating to the penalties, although you understand the rationale for the behind the penalties, because we might be intending to target the big business because the current 25,000, you know, it will be too little for them, like I've indicated. But you are raising a very important point to say that we might, of course, unintentionally, you know, adversely affect the small builder who might have, you know, contravened this particular piece of legislation. You know, I only concur with you, as I'm saying that I'm quite frankly in your hands, in the sense that we need to come up with a framework in terms of how we strike the balance. Or maybe we should, of course, provide a particular exemption on the circumstances of the reasons. But my understanding is that there will be each and every case will be dealt with on its own merits. Like, for example, you know, a contravention will be for this for the small company, and the nature of the transgression will also be evaluated by the committee, you know, that will be responsible to come up with that particular kind of decision-making process. It's not a question that is going to be applicable to everyone, but I'm saying that if you're a small business, of course, I don't think that you'll be subjected to the same penalty like the big business. In the instance, it will depend on the number of the other, or on the nature of the transgression, and the committee will, of course, evaluate the case on the merits, on its own merits, as and when it comes before it. But I've noted your point, but I'm saying that we should maybe find a framework in the regulation in terms of dealing with that particular specific element, that we don't necessarily defeat the purpose that we want to achieve by providing access and training to the small builders, the mesalari and all those other things. But at the same time, we give them heavy penalties that is necessarily going to take them out of the industry. So I think you're correct, we have to strike the balance there. So that is the issue that we need to have a look into. But the fundamental issue is that we look in terms of, we'll evaluate the case, I think, you know, based on its own merits. But the target, like I've indicated clearly, without any fear of contradiction, we're targeting those particular big companies in a sense that, actually, you know, the issue for them with regard to the minimum fee that is prescribed at the moment, it was not actually making sense. The other question that we raised and the comments were raised by Honorable Member Mkhonto, you know, I think they are relevant, Chair, in the sense that, you know, overall, we need to have a look in terms of, for each and every development that we want to do, you know, in the main, like, for example, going to respond to the same question that Nevelev asked, you know, I've responded to, why the MEC and MMC in terms of the subsidy housing program, is that the question that Honorable Mkhonto, you know, asked, you know, she has asked, it relates directly to that particular responsibility to say, let it be the responsibility of that political head of that particular municipality. If province is an implementing agent, the MEC must take responsibility in terms of making sure that all the projects that are within his own areas of jurisdiction are enrolled. Chairperson, it's very easy for them to be that. Remember, MEC and MMC do not play a role in the appointment. We agree. But they got the responsibility over the oversight. Like, for example, Chair, you may be aware that for each and every implementation of project a year, the MEC receive or they submit what we call the business plans. So the MEC will know which project are which areas, which project are in the business plan. So surely he needs to ask the responsibility to the HOD or to the DG to say to academic officers as to whether those particular projects are wrong. So that is the issue that we are trying to advance, to say that only in respect of the subsidized, you know, subsidy programs, the MEC and the MMC must take responsibility. It relates to the question of what you said, that you find that if maybe the project is not enrolled, it means that the consumer is exposed. Now we're going to build where we're not supposed to build, we're going to build where there's no, it's not a restructuring zone. You find that there will be those other chaos, there will be no plans, there will be no settlement that is established, there will be no roads and all those other things that has been raised. So I think it's important, Chairperson, to leave that particular aspect relating to that particular responsibility, because the MECs and MMCs will, of course, actually not deal with that particular responsibility in line with, you know, with that request. I think Honorable Tegi also posed the same question in relation to the fees that are payable. You know, we've responded to say that we look case by case, and therefore the matters will be looked at, but we're focusing primarily on the big companies so that we can deal with them, you know, effectively. We want to deal with the issues in relation to the program. And the issue of the small contract, the business is that, Chair, we've indicated that we're going to, the bill proposes that we'll use a particular portion of the surplus fund for developmental programs. Developmental programs including, entirely, Chair, the issue of training of those businesses in those particular areas. And to give them access, not only access in terms of exempting them or giving them a capacity for them to be trained and to be enrolled, is also to give them access, you know, for them to have access to information. Because what I have spoken about the issue of access to information is very critical, because that's what I've said, Chair, in my concluding remark, that the biggest elephant in the room in terms of how do we assess ourselves, the impact of the legislation once we pass it, is that whether, you know, the education and consumer awareness, it reached the purported education of people that we wanted, you know, to have an access to. I agree with her to say, you know, access to information is a challenge, you know, at the moment. So we look at that particular kind of issues that you've raised, and the fees payable and the programs that, you know, might be initiated, you know, in the main that we have to give the Chair. And then the issue that relating to Section 32 and 33, Chairperson, is the issue that we have put forth. I think that would be my contribution at this level, and I'll hand over to the, you know, CEO for, you know, for his comment as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think as part of what we are mandated to do is to look at the issue of training. So in terms of the new act, we will be setting aside a portion of the surplus funds to drive the issue of training, as we are looking at creating capacity within the sector as well as driving transformation. So we'll be looking at all the various stakeholders as we are planning in terms of us creating the capacity in the sector. So we will be using those surplus funds, a portion of that, and to drive the issue of training initiatives with a focus of access to rural areas as well as urban areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if Didi Nwongo has anything to add. Thanks, Chair.
DG.
Chairperson, I'm not sure Chairperson is calling me.
So I was saying, do you have anything to add on the responses?
No, Chairperson. No, Chairperson, I've made my input. Thanks.
There are three hands, Chairperson.
I see there is three hands which are probably follow up. Honorable Mokgotho, Honorable Buthatseki, Honorable Harold.
Thank you, Chairperson. My follow up question is, I would request that the department look into this point, which I have stated before. The state should regulate housing finance through providing housing finance that does not exceed a period of 10 years. Thank you, Chairperson.
Paul Harold.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm still concerned around the responses to section 32 and 33. I think that the responses create an illegality in this bill. And I would like the department to have a look at that. There's a misunderstanding around the role of an MMC and the way these two clauses are drafted intend for the MMC to appoint only registered house builders. MMCs are not involved in tender processes and the appointment of house builders. It cannot be left like this. I don't think it's legal, and it certainly doesn't. It cannot be what we intend to do, is to create the role of a politician to appoint a house builder and a politician to release funds. It just doesn't make sense to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Harold, Honorable Tseki.
I didn't hear the communal side, Chair. What are the rights and claims that people in the communal land could do? And those miscellaneous, sorry if I missed it.
Mr. Chen and Mr. Nguyen and CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in relation to Member Heron's point, it's something that we will consider to make sure that in terms of the delegations as well as in terms of account of financial accountability and responsibility, I think it's a fair point that's been made. On the issue around the question of communal land, and I think we must be clear that in relation to the NHBRC, this act, it will apply to any project that is implemented where there is funds, for example, in a subsidy project that will apply and the bill will apply. So the issue is not about the land tenure. It is about the fact that there is a structure and that structure then gets built and it then gets approved within a framework. So anything that occurs within that, because I think we must be very, very careful that we say, because I think there's important safety, there's important regulatory, there's important compliance issues. Now, as I think Quezzy has indicated, we're going to have to strike a balance between what is in the Act in relation to its scope of accountability and coverage vis-a-vis the regulatory. And Chair, I think the point that Member Tseke is raising is something that obviously as part of the processes that we take and it will probably come up, we would look at that with particular reference to those provinces which are predominantly you find communal land. In relation to the point around the question of training, I think the developmental introductions or amendments that we've made in this is to make sure that we actually take everyone along in the building in building and value construction chain. So it is not about leaving out anyone. And the issue is, it's going to be an issue that you're going to have this act when it eventually does come in, but it's going to operate within a framework of compliance and monitoring and oversight that occurs at the province and a municipality. So the messalas that Member Tseke raises is the issue around, well, if there's no information and there's no proper education that's provided, the issue is how will we apply and enforce compliance? And that will take place in predominantly the training. Hence the CEO raised the issue is that we are wanting to include or allow for the NHPRC to then use a bigger portion of the funding for training, education, and information. Because we know if we are introducing rapid land release, if we're introducing PHP, we're gonna have a lot more local builders, local construction that's going to take place. We need to strike a balance between compliance, economy, and the ability for people to access housing. But Chair, I think that's a point that we will take again. The team are nodding around me, and obviously with what occurs during this process after. Parliament then takes the comments and together with the Parliament's legal advisor, we will then start working on some of these things so that we can also then make sure that those points are raised. I think the points are really from where we sit, they're valuable and the issues that we will consider and obviously with the committee through the Office of the Minister Tracy. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think with regard to the comment on section 32 and 33, Chair, from the point of view as a drafter, you look at it that, you know, there are certain instances that you can cure that issue and a concern of Honourable Member Aaron in the sense that if you don't bestow the responsibility on both two, but you can, of course, if the intention remains the same, you can, of course, deal with it within the context of, you know, the accounting officers as defined in terms of the PFMA and the municipal, you know, finance systems act respectively. So we look at it, I think it's an issue that we can, like, for example, in terms of the enforceability of that particular provision, I think it's an issue that we can share within that particular context that I've proposed. Thank you very much.
There are questions on the chat from Honorable Tafin, who's has got a network problem. One, it says, in terms of clause 26, the bill does not specify which procedures are in place to process late registration. And the second one is that, and what were the key motivation for the establishment of non-profit companies for risk-based insurance offerings when the warranty fund already exists. Can we? Yes, Honorable. Yes, Mr. Chen.
Thanks, thanks, Chair. Chair, on the first part, the processes, the regulations obviously will deal with the first part. And obviously that will be done in consultation with yourself. So the operationalization of the Act will be done through that, and it will address the point raised by the Honorable Tafeni. I'll just ask Mr. Boy to indicate and supplement or provide some kind of framework on the point around the rationale for the establishment of the nonprofit.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, Chair, currently, in terms of the current Act, the warranty fund was established as a form of a protection for the housing consumers. Now, as the NHBRC, we have to fund our own operations now and still have some portion that is set aside to grow the warranty fund. Now, looking at our operations, we need to ensure that then we have enough resources to run the operations, hence the establishment of that non-profit organization when that would be required, if there would be a need for that to be established, so that then we don't have to tap into the warranty fund to run the current affairs of the organization.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I see Mr. Tseki still has the hands. Is it the old hands, Mr. Tseki? Mr. Tseki?
Excuse me.
Okay. It was the old hand. Okay, thank you very much for the department for this empowering workshop. As I have indicated, the process is in the hands of Parliament. And therefore, the legal issues like which were raised by Honorable Harold, we have legal services of Parliament, which will then engage them on those issues and see how we can then proceed. So we members, I hope you are empowered to take the process forward to receive input from communities. And later on, in terms of the process, members will have opportunity to deliberate on what the department has tabled as a bill, what people are saying about the bill, and then you then make the inputs out of the engagement that you had with the people and advised by legal team of Parliament. And then we'll then have deliberation, which will then be taken into Parliament for discussion further and then finalize it, the bill. So thank you very much. If there is anything that has not been covered, we still have enough time as members to engage with the bill. The bill is with the committee, and it's our responsibility now to drive this process. Thank you very much, honorable members and the department for empowering us. Koliswa?
Chair, any other thing?
Thank you, Chairperson.
No, Chairperson, that was the only thing that was on the agenda, was the workshop today.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members and the team from the department. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Viva Chair. Malibongwe, Chair.